Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Benjamin Bornstein to discuss draft prospects and March Madness. From there, I'll review the Spurs' last two games and some comments from Kyrie Irving on Victor Wembanyama's Defensive Player of the Year candidacy. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Ben. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, sir. It is March. It is the best time of year.
I know. I feel bad, man, that we're barely calling you up. And of course, right when March, like this is like when you're needed by everyone right now for your analysis, which is great. Because
this is where I thrive.
Yes, I know. This time in draft time, we're like, when I'm like, oh, Ben, I need you here like as soon as possible. Before we jump into the March Madness talk, I just wanted to kind of, since I haven't had you on since December, just kind of give me your quick little assessment of how have the Spurs been in your perspective. What has kind of been the highlights for you? Kind of what you expected? What are your thoughts on how the Spurs have done this year?
Everything that Victor Wembanyama does is a highlight for me. Him breathing is all I need. But the Spurs have been much better. I think the play of Trey Jones has been much better. Him and Victor Wembanyama and Devin Vassell and Victor Wembanyama have gotten some nice chemistry going. I'm very excited about how that looks next year, in addition to whoever they draft this year. Unfortunately, they're still losing a lot of games, but they look a lot better than they did against a lot of those same teams, you know, earlier in the season. They're scaring some teams here and there, which is nice. There are a couple of surprise wins here and there, and really they're not the Detroit Pistons, so all is good.
Yeah. So, I mean, what the Wizards have fallen behind the Pistons. That's what's even crazier. Win or loss record. All right, man. So let's go ahead and jump right into this March Madness talk here. So before we begin the discussion of the prospects, the draft prospects, I do want to kind of talk about how the Spurs could potentially have four picks in this year's June draft. So the Spurs will definitely have their own first round pick, which right now, because they do have the third worst record, it's most likely going to go 1-3, land there if they end up finishing the season with the third worst record. They also might have the Toronto pick, which if it holds and the Spurs get that pick, it could probably fall anywhere from like 7th through like 10th. They're in the lottery. So again, they could have possibly two top 10 picks for the first round. Then they also might have two second round picks. So they're going to get their own second round pick as long as it falls 31-49, the Spurs' second round pick. Right now, it's projected to go 33rd. So again, they would get that pick. And also, they're going to get the Lakers' second round pick. And that one right now, it would project to fall about 43rd, according to some of these different mocks right now. So again, the Spurs could potentially have two first round picks, two top 10 first round picks, and two second round picks kind of in the 30 to 40 range in this coming draft before we begin this March Madness talk. I also want to note one notable tweet that came around earlier. According to Spurs French reporter Theo Quintard, translated by a friend of the friend Matthew Tynan of Corporate Knowledge, RC Buford is reportedly in France watching a game by draft prospect Zachary Risacher. I apologize if I butchered that name there. He's actually mocked in a lot of the drafts to go first overall. And then also Quintard, the reporter from France, he reported also that a Spurs owner, Peter J. Holt, was actually in France earlier this year to see Risacher in person as well. So that, again, that's just kind of notable, even though Risacher is not in the tournament March Madness, of course, because he's playing overseas. It's just notable that he's one of those prospects out there. So again, keep that in mind as we begin this discussion. All right, Ben, so I've kind of sent you what I did was on Monday evening I went through all the usual mocks that I use, so a lot of different outlets, Athletic, ESPN, different sites that I've used traditionally over the last 4 or 5 years. And I kind of put the first mock ranges kind of where mocks had certain players going to the Spurs. And then, of course, I did the mock average, and I'll give more details if I need to. But I've sent you the list of all the players that are playing in this opening round of March Madness. And so what I'm going to let you do is kind of just take it away and kind of give your perspective if you think these players might be fits to the Spurs, kind of who are these players. And then if one of these players, have some interesting questions about these player, I'll definitely present it to you. So go ahead and take it away. Just kind of let go if you want to begin with the list.
All right, let's do it. So part of the first four games actually playing tonight, we're recording on Wednesday, March 20th. Colorado's Cody Williams, a prospect a lot of people have in the top five for the most part. I think he's a consensus top five guy right now. Mm-hmm. 6'8" wing, kind of does a little bit of everything, still very raw. He's very much a play for high upside, which is what a lot of people like to do. Shooting has improved throughout the season, but still needs to show more of that. But in this kind of draft, it's a very weak draft. It's anybody can go number one. There's no real consensus number one, I'd say. Mm-hmm. That's a guy who can make an impression. So he'll have a chance to do it tonight. We'll see if they win. If they don't, then you get one postseason game from him. If not, you get another one. Yay us. Another guy on this list I happen to really like. I really liked him last year, too. Creighton point guard Trey Alexander. The way he plays the game, I just enjoy. He makes that offense run. He finds guys in their spots. He knows when he has to take over. He's great. I really love watching him play. I think the biggest knock on him is a little undersized, and he's 6'1", 6'2". So a lot of people, he's not big enough to play point guard in this league. I don't buy that. That's what a lot of people said about Steph Curry. Another guy on here, Big Ten guy, Terrence Shannon Jr., mocked near the end of the first round, a little surprised, not because he's not good, but because he's old. Mm-hmm. He's fourth or fifth year senior. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he's been around. So for him to be mocked near 20, around 26 is fantastic for him. I like him a lot. He's about 6'5", 6'6", does a little bit of everything. There are times he was saving Illinois late in games. Good player. I think there was an issue earlier in the year off the court. It was resolved. As long as teams are comfortable with checking in on that background, checking on those red flags, I think everything will be fine. A guy I've actually written about, Arizona's Pella Larson, 6'5 shooting guard, nice player, just very solid. Doesn't do anything spectacularly, doesn't do anything horrifically. He's just very solid, very good. Plays solid defense, makes shots when you need him to. It's funny because a lot of people say, oh, it sounds like he's nothing to write home about. But those are the kind of guys who stick in the second round because they're older. They understand the game. They understand their role. They play within their role very well. He could very easily be one of those guys. A couple of these next guys, very intriguing. A few SEC guys are going to talk. Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham, Dalton Connect. I'm going to go with Connect first. I don't even have words. He's incredible. He is so much fun to watch. He's a great shooter. He's pretty athletic, I'd say. He's had a couple highlight dunks on people, breakaway dunks, contested dunks. He's done everything. He's a really good shooter. Again, there are times when he is the Tennessee offense. Tennessee, very much a defensive team. You know, they have nights where they can't hit the broadside of a barn with the exception of Connect. He's the only guy who is consistently a good shooter for this team. So that's part of what makes him fun to watch. I think he's had multiple 40 burgers this year, phenomenal. And he always seems to show up in the bigger games. So it's awesome. Two Kentucky guys, Rob Dillingham, Reed Sheppard, both of them guards. Reed Sheppard, 6'4", not super explosive, not super athletic. He's very, you know, it's kind of middle of the road in that regard. He's just a smart player. When he's the point guard, when he's playing point guard for Kentucky, that offense just runs better. Everybody is in the places they're supposed to be. Everybody is, you know, for the most part, people are getting easy buckets when he's passing, when he's moving the ball, when he's driving when he needs to. Not afraid of the big moment. Had a game winner this year. Just threw up this floater. It was awesome. Kentucky out of timeouts. They come up the floor. You know, I think everybody on that team knew, okay, we need to get Reed Sheppard the ball. And everybody kind of cleared out, and he just went. And he makes this floater and wins the game. It was awesome. Rob Dillingham, the more explosive point guard for Kentucky. Also a good passer. A little bit of a better rebounder, probably. But he's explosive. He's super athletic. You know, I'd say he's probably not as polished a player as Reed Sheppard, but his ceiling is a little higher because of his athleticism. And Reed Sheppard's a freshman, by the way, but he plays like a four-year guy, which is that I enjoy that personally. You know, we got to get to the elephant on the court, Zach Edey. He is unmissable, 7'4", playing for Purdue. I love that he's mocked in the first round. I just love his game. He can do anything in the post. He can go over either shoulder. He's immovable, certainly in the college game. You have to think at 7'4 and almost 300 pounds, he's probably pretty immovable at the NBA level. You know, he's not a guy who's as quick as a Joel Embiid. He's not as agile as a Victor Wembanyama. But, you know, there are roles for guys who are big, can defend the rim, and are decent help defenders. His big issue probably is that he's always going to be a drop defender on screens, which people have pointed out. But he has worked on shooting a little bit. It's gotten a little better. And it's a little bit of mid-range, not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention half of UConn's team. There's a reason they're picked to repeat as national champs. They have really solid players. I mean, they're second round guys, potentially, and Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer, you know, very similar to Pella Larsson in that they know their role. They play incredibly well. They play within themselves. They don't try and force stuff. They don't do crazy stuff. It's awesome. Stephon Castle, freshman, potential top 10 pick, was sidelined by injury earlier in the year. Really picked up his game. He's a good passer, pretty decent shooter, just moves, just as quick, good defender as well. And then you have Donovan Klingon, 7'2", 265, 270, somewhere in there, another immovable guy. He's gotten a lot better. He was one of the most efficient players in college basketball last season. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of in limited minutes because he was playing behind Adama Sanogo, which is crazy to think about because Sanogo was a second round pick last year. And is arguably not as good as Klingon, but he was a senior. You know, he knew Coach Hurley's system. He knew UConn. So he got a lot of the minutes. Donovan Klingon was averaging maybe 15 minutes last year. Of course, he's the starter this year, averaging way more minutes, still pretty efficient. Guy who plays with his back to the basket pretty well, not really a shooter either. But a big man who is more of a shooter, Duke's Kyle Filipowski. A lot of people like him. He's pretty versatile because he's shown that he can play in the post. He can back to the basket. He's got a couple moves here and there. He's also a shooter. He's a willing shooter. He probably has to improve his percentages a bit, but Duke is probably going to go about as far as Filipowski will take them in this tournament. They have other good players. Jared McCain is a guy who's probably going to go to the draft this year. He's a freshman. He's been a very good point guard. They have a couple other guys who could potentially go to the draft, maybe not this year, but maybe next year. So, you know, they're going to go as far as Filipowski takes them, and he's going to have some good shooting nights and protect the rim a bit more than usual for them to do that. They do not have an easy task in front of them. They were not gifted a nice, easy, breezy bracket this year.
Okay. So just some quick questions just based off what you said there. One was what you mentioned about the second round picks. Why those picks may be important, whether the Spurs get their own or also that Lakers second round pick, because let's just say that the Spurs do make some sort of splashy move this coming offseason, whether they sign someone or they trade for someone, and you know they don't have a lot of cap room left. Well, then now the NBA did implement in the new CBA those new second round pick contracts. So again, those could end up being pretty key. So again, normally we don't really pay too much attention to the second round picks, but like you mentioned, there's some players that really interested you there in that second round pick range, and so those players could be pretty interesting here. Would you say for the most part, a lot of these guys are probably going to most likely be role players, right? They're not really any kind of like stars that you kind of see out there. Where are like some of these guys, like, are they starters in the NBA? Are they coming off the bench, kind of take a few years to figure it out? What do you think?
It's really, this is a cop-out answer, but it's really going to depend on which team grabs them.
Okay.
I think in the right situation, a guy like Reed Shepherd, he may not start, but he'll get good minutes off the bench and he'll make an impact immediately. A guy like Dalton Knecht, on a team that needs shooting, on a team that needs someone who can create his own shot, like, he will get minutes right away. I could see a guy like Terrence Shannon Jr., Trey Alexander, their backups, you know, maybe they'll get 10, 15 minutes here and there. But I think a lot of people would say that a lot of the overseas guys in this draft are the potential superstars. Donar Richichet, a couple names I've been seeing come up, Tijane. Oh boy, Tijane Salon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ron Holland of the G League, he's a bit of a question mark. You know, he ended his season early, had an injury. You're talking about Nikola Topic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy that a lot of Spurs Twitter would love to see the Spurs draft. You know, 6'6" point guard. He's a big point guard. He has, you know, he's got to figure out his shot, but you know, pretty good. He's big for a guard. He sees over the defense. He reads the defense really well. Talking about Alexander Sarr, 7'1" pogo stick, super athletic. You know, a lot of people get excited about him because if you're the Spurs, you could end up with Twin Towers again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that excites a lot of people because those were good times.
Yeah,
a lot of wins. Happen again.
Yeah. A lot of 50 plus win seasons and top 10 teams all the time. So definitely those players, a lot of those players are mocked ahead of some of these other guys in college. One of my other questions I had for you, this player is not mentioned here on the list that I sent you because his team's not in March Madness, but what happened to Isaiah Collier? Because when Colin Reed and I talked to you back in December, he was, I think he was like the he was projected to be number one at the time, and now as I did his mocks, he's actually projected about 15th right now, so he's fallen a bit. Can you just kind of, or he's got 14th right now is his mock, kind of what's happened with him this season in USC?
He had an injury.
Oh, hit an injury. Okay,
he got knocked out for the rest of the season.
Oh no, that's probably why. Yeah,
that's part of it. And frankly, USC has been just terrible this year. I mean, seriously, they've been that. This was a team everybody had in the top three of the Pac-12, and they've been horrific. With, you know, Bronny James missed the first few weeks with, you know, that heart issue.
Yeah.
And Collier's injury is a hand injury, which is not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mostly the injury. I mean, I think he's only going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, but that happened a while ago. So it was really until the end of his season. And, you know, I'm sure he'll be back by the time the combine comes around. He may play in some of those, you know, pro-ams they have over the summer. But I think if he comes back, he goes to the combine, he tests well, he shows that his hand is fine. I think, I think he could vault back into the top 10 because everybody really liked his size at 6'3". He's a strong 6'3". He's very linebackery, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So he's built very solid. He knows how to use that size to get into the lane, finish at the rim. So I think it's just for him, it's going to be a matter of testing well and showing that, you know, he didn't put on any weight. He didn't get out of shape too badly. And, you know, they're going to have opportunities. Teams are going to have opportunities to see him in private workouts too. So.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Just, I guess this is kind of more, just an open-ended question here. Do you, is there like an ideal player that kind of fits with Wemby? Because we know that like Wemby's and Vassell might be like the two players that are there for like the long term in terms of kind of just how the team's building out the roster. Is there a player there in this list that kind of fits with that with Wemby and Vassell going forward, whether it's off the bench of this player or maybe carve out a role for himself in the starting lineup in the next few years? Is there anyone that could have said that who you think would be a good complement to those two players? Or is that
I think it depends on what the Spurs are trying to do. If
let's say okay, here because in this scenario they might need to trade that.
I'll give you a few different scenarios.
Let's say they get like a star point guard. Mm-hmm.
If they get a star point guard in the offseason, they go out and they get a guy they really like. I don't know. They make some crazy trade for Tyrese Maxey. Highly hypothetical. Don't come at me. I'm just throwing names out here. They go out and they get a point guard they really like, all-star caliber point guard. Trade him. And pair him with Wembanyama. Amazing. What you need then, if you're the Spurs, you need a shooter. You need a floor spacer, mm-hmm. potentially a guy who can create shots for himself. That might be a Dalton Connect. Or if you want to say, all right, cool, we have this offense, we have Vassell, we have Trae Young, or whoever the point guard is, and we have Wembanyama, and we have a bunch of role players that know their role, and they'll play within their role. You know, let's go out and get a guy who's maybe an athletic slasher, finishes at the rim, or maybe we go and get another big man who can help Wembanyama protect the rim, because Wembanyama will step out and guard on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. More often than a lot of other fives. So if you get a guy who can be strictly a five, if you get an Alexander Sarr and you go full Twin Towers, I think you're signaling, all right, we're all in on defense, especially because we kind of have to hide Trae Young, mm-hmm. potentially Trae Young, or, you know, whoever the other point guard is, we may have to hide them, or we may have to hide whoever's playing at three, whoever that is to start the season. So let's go out and let's get defense. We'll figure out the offense later because we have the star point guard now. He's mm-hmm. going to run our offense. It should look a lot smoother. We have Trae Jones coming off the bench, so the second unit should be solid. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting how you said that. Like it kind of depends what move they make first, and then that might lead to you know what player best complements Wemby and Vassell going forward.
The only problem is the draft happens before free agency.
Yes, I know. Because when I said the picks, I was like, oh, they might not have one of those picks if they have to move one of those picks. So I mean, that's as long as the Toronto pick falls to San Antonio, that's like the one luxury for San Antonio is that they could potentially have two top 10 picks here coming into this draft. In case they do need like a draft asset to try to move.
You gotta like your odds being able to pick in the lottery twice.
Yeah. And then, like I said, those second round picks could be come in handy. And again, in the event that the Spurs do make some sort of splashy move and they don't have a lot of, you know, cap space or roster availability, well, then they could use one of these young players from college there at the second round if they want to sign that player. It's like a second round pick kind of type of contract. So again, we'll kind of see what happens there. Thanks, Ben, so much for taking some time, man. And you know, joining us, of course, we're going to be reaching out to you as the season ends, when we start looking at the lottery and as the draft gets closer. Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. Okay, so now for our next topic, I want to go and explore how the Spurs have done in their last two games since I last recorded a Spurs cast episode. So let's go back to Sunday. The Spurs are in Austin for that second game of the I-35 series where they hosted the Brooklyn Nets in Austin, Texas. And so this is a very interesting game for the Spurs. They ended up going down by 11 pretty early in this game. I think it was in the first quarter. They trailed for most of the game. However, they kept it close with Brooklyn. With about 6 minutes left in the game, the Nets are actually up by 10, and the Spurs make a little bit of a run here, and they make a comeback, and they actually force overtime. And then in overtime, it was the Spurs who completely took control, and they ended up winning the game. This was a game where Victor Wembanyama had one of his monster games of the season. He ends up playing 36 minutes in this game, the second most minutes he's played in a game this season. He ends up with 33 points on 54% shooting, 15 rebounds, 7 assists to 4 turnovers, and then 7 blocks in this game. And then what was really remarkable about Wemby is just the fact that how you see that he really comes at, performs at his best in the most crucial times of games. And so that was shown there. When you look at just his fourth quarter and overtime numbers, he ends up getting 13 points. points. He was, you know, the Nets just had no answers for him in the fourth quarter and overtime. And also three of his blocks came in the fourth quarter and overtime. And one of his blocks was one of those crucial blocks where at first the refs had called it a goaltend, but then they went back and reviewed it. And it was actually, it was a clean block by Wemby there. So again, Wemby had a monster night there against the Brooklyn Nets, where the Spurs got their 15th win of the season by beating Brooklyn in overtime. One thing I also want to note about just the way the Spurs fed Wemby and found him inside is that he ended up tying his season high with paint points, with 22 paint points in that game against Brooklyn. So 22 of his 33 points did come in the paint against the Nets. Then on Tuesday, the Spurs returned to San Antonio, where they hosted the Dallas Mavericks for the final time this season, playing the Mavs for the final time. This one, the Spurs fell behind by 13 pretty early. Then they kept it close. You know, they were right there with Dallas at different times. They did at least take the Mavs down at crunch time. Again, Dallas didn't get an easy win here. They were favored by 9, but the Spurs did make it, you know, pretty close there at the end. However, Dallas, you know, they entered as the best crunch time team according to win-loss record in crunch time. And so Dallas did just that. Even though Luka Doncic had a tough night shooting the ball, he ended up shooting 6 of 27 from the floor. They still had too many answers with Kyrie Irving. And then Dante Exum came off the bench, and he had a big three there late in the game. And so Dallas ended up winning this game by 6 points. They beat the Spurs. And this is a game where, even though, like, you know, it just shows you just the kind of players that Luka and Wemby are, the fact that, you know, for them, they had a tough night shooting the ball, but you should still see the numbers that they each put up in this game. So Wemby, he ends up played 32 minutes of this game. He ends up with just 12 points. Again, he had a tough night shooting the ball, 3 of 13 from the floor. 11 rebounds, still a double-double. 3 assists to 5 turnovers. Okay, that was a little bit of an issue for him. But again, 6 blocks in this game. Wemby records 6 blocks, and then he also had 1 steal in this game. And then same thing for Luka. Yes, he had a bad night shooting the ball, 6 of 27 from the floor. However, he still gets a triple-double in this, you know, bad type of game for him. 18 points, 16 assists, and 10 rebounds in 40 minutes of play. So again, the Spurs did end up losing to Dallas, and so Dallas ended up sweeping the series against San Antonio for this season, and the Spurs are now left with 13 games left in the season. Okay, so now for this next topic, I really want to discuss a quote that Kyrie Irving had after the Mavs beat the Spurs in San Antonio on Tuesday evening. This quote was interesting for two different parts of it. For the first part, Kyrie gives like a little bit different of a perspective from what a guard seeing from his perspective against going up against Wemby when Wemby's there, you know, patrolling the paint. And then also he gave really support for Wemby as a possible defensive player of the year candidate. So let's kind of go through what Kyrie said here. He said, "You got to be aware of him late challenging, and he has the timing of a guard." So that's something new that stuck out, was the fact that Kyrie says that Wemby has really good timing, especially the timing of a guard. "I don't know if it's just he's played against guards, but I'm just saying, I think he's got a lot of reps of playing against good guards and guarding them one-on-one. Today, I thought I had a reverse layup and he ended up blocking it on the left side because I thought he was going to be on the right side. But he has this long wingspan, so he covers up a lot of space. Me as a competitor and challenger, I like going in there and challenging him, because if you can finish on Victor Wembanyama, I feel like you can finish on anybody in the world. He's going to block some and he's going to make you change it, but it's only going to make you better as a basketball player. And that's what I want. And I think everybody should relish in that, but also be smart in challenging him because he does bait you a lot." So again, that was just an interesting perspective, something I hadn't heard yet from another NBA player, is Kyrie's, analysis of Wemby, especially at the guard position, just saying how he has that timing of a guard, and just the fact that Wemby's, you know, it's really you have to be really crafty to get around Wemby and try to you know, not let him block your shot or alter your shot. And so that's where Kyrie's saying is that it's making him a better basketball player for that to happen. And I would have to go through all the game logs, but I want to say Wemby's blocked Kyrie, I think, in every Mavs Spurs game that they've played, you know, that they've both been in the same game, or at least two of the three or two of the four. I don't recall, but I know the season opened with Wemby getting his first block on a Kyrie mid-ranger, and then even last night on Tuesday Wemby got that block there on that layup like Kyrie mentioned there. So again, that was just an interesting perspective from Kyrie's point of view about why he thinks, you know, about Wemby's timing and why he's so good about blocking and anticipating shots there for the guards in the league. Here was the other part of his quote, and then from there I'm going to kind of dig into some stats, because it was just really interesting to hear him say these things about Wemby's defensive player of the year candidacy. So here's what he said. He continues. "He does do things like a defensive player of the year would. He's showing signs that he's exceeded all the defensive player of the year stats of the previous guys that have won it. You guys see it. I don't know who they're going to pick, but I mean, he has all the tools to be named Defensive Player of the Year. He's for sure a candidate. I don't know how he wouldn't be, unless the game's played in minutes. But every Defensive Player of the Year that's won the past few years, he's almost head and shoulders, and we still have, what, 15 or some odd games left? I give him credit for being such a young player, but learning on the fly and doing everything he can to get his team wins. Yes. So again, that was Kyrie there, you know, saying that, you know, from his perspective, just on the what Wemby's already done in this, in his first rookie season, even though it's not even finished yet, he thinks that Wemby's, you know, definitely a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and right there of possible candidate to win the award. So what I did here was I was listening to Kyrie's, you know, reading these quotes from Kyrie, and I kind of want to do just a little bit of research and kind of just see, you know, when he says like Wemby's like a far and ahead compared to former winners of the Defensive Player of the Year award, I just kind of wanted to see that. I want to see what is his like real candidacy, and I'm just using base stats here, so I'm not going like into deflections or opponent shooting at the rim, because I've kind of done that in previous Spurs episodes. We know it's really good numbers for Wemby, but I just wanted to see base stats wise, where does he rank compared to the last five Defensive Player of the Year winners? And there's one thing that kind of sticks out for Wemby, unfortunately, that's not really his fault. It's more so the team that he's on and the way they're performing that might hurt his candidacy. But Kyrie really did have a point when I actually look into some of these numbers. So right now, Wemby has played 61 games. So all he needs to do is play four games in these last five, in these last 13, to qualify for the awards season here. All he needs to do is get to 65 games. So again, right now, as of Wednesday evening that I'm recording, he is at 61 games that he's played already. His numbers right now, and I'm only going to talk about defensive numbers, again, very base stats here: 10.4 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 3.5 blocks, leading the league right now, and 2.2 personal fouls. Very low for a big man who's getting a lot, you know, a lot of players are trying to attack him and try to score on him. The part that's going to hurt his candidacy most likely is just his team's ranking defensively. Right now, the Spurs are ranked 23rd defensively, and I'll tell you why that's important a little bit when we go through some of these other players that have won the award before. So let's talk about rebounds. I'm just talking about players from the last 5 years that have won the award. So Jaren Jackson Jr. won in 2023, last season. Marcus Smart won in 2022. Rudy Gobert won in 2021. Giannis won in 2020, and then Gobert won also in 2019. Okay, so these are the five players that I'm kind of just comparing Wemby stats with and their stats. So regarding rebounds, again, Wemby's at 10.4 right now. He's already ahead of Jaren Jackson last year, ahead of Marcus Smart. Of course, we know Smart doesn't grab a lot of rebounds as a guard. He didn't have as many as Gobert and Giannis in those other three seasons, that they were like around 13 rebounds each. But again, just barely off those numbers. So again, he's getting those that over 10 rebounds. 1.3 steals. He's ahead of Jaren Jackson Jr., who only had a steal, Gobert, Giannis, and Gobert again. The only player that was barely ahead of him was Marcus Smart, but barely, but at 1.7 steals, which you expect Smart to have more opportunity to get steals, considering that he is a guard. Again, just the fact that Wemby's get right there ahead of all those other traditional big men, that just shows you right there that you know, his numbers are above. And again, if I even dig into the numbers and look at the deflections, I'm sure Wemby's beating all these guys in those kind of numbers as well. So again, steals wise, only one player was ahead of him in these last five, and that was Smart, and it because he is a guard. Here's a stat that none of these players are beating him in: blocks. So Wemby's averaging 3.5 blocks right now. Of course, none of those other five players had 3.5 blocks at all. The highest player closest to him was, let's see here, Jaren Jackson Jr. last season had 3 blocks a game. But again, Wemby's right now at 3.5. And then here's another telling stat: personal fouls. Wemby's only at 2.2 personal fouls per game right now. None of these players that have won the Defensive Player of the Year have had that few fouls. Again, the closest to Wemby right now is Marcus Smart at 2.3 fouls in his Defensive Player of the Year season, and Rudy Gobert in his 2021 season. So again, personal fouls, blocks, Wemby, these last five winners aren't even at Wemby's numbers right now. And then again, you have to really pick and point and find others who are in the steals and the rebounds category. So the reason why I do say the defensive, the team's defensive rating is probably going to end up hurting Wemby's case is because I did just some quick research where I went from using the NBA's defensive rating site, basically, or the stats on those sites. And I went from today or last season, 2023, all the way down to when they first start data, which is in 1997. I guess that's when it first gets tracked, the defensive ratings. And unfortunately for Wemby, nobody that's won the award, again, from 1997 all the way to 2023, has ever won the award ranked that where the Spurs are at defensively. So When we talk about Jackson, Marcus Smart, Gobert, Giannis, and Gobert, all those players' teams, they were top five defensively. They were actually top three, all five of those players. So you do see that voters tend to go right. You know, they try to look at who's the best defense initially, and then, you know, start to make their way through there. Then I went all the way back to 1997, and almost every winner is on a top 10 defense, or mostly top five, honestly. And then, but it's always top 10. There was only two outliers who weren't in a top 10 defense. That was 2007, Marcus Camby. His team Denver was ranked 12th defensively. So again, Camby, the Nuggets were ranked 12th that year in 2007, and he ended up winning Defensive Player of the Year. Then the other player who's an outlier here is Dikembe Mutombo. In 1998, the Atlanta Hawks were ranked 13th defensively. So again, the lowest someone's been picked Defensive Player of the Year since 1997 in the last 26 years is 1998. So again, that's the one part that's going to probably hurt Webby's candidacy. Again, just the fact that the Spurs, you know, it's hard. It's a little bit tough of an argument to say, you know, the Defensive Player of the Year is on a bottom 10 team. However, you could just use when Wemby's on the floor sets, because like I mentioned before in last week's episode, you know, the Spurs are a really good defense with him. And then even Kirk Goldsberry of ESPN had some tweets over the weekend saying that the Spurs would be number one defensively, basically, as long as Wemby's on the floor. So again, if he played 48 minutes, the Spurs would have the best defense in the league, according to what the numbers are saying right now. So again, that was just a quick little research kind of analysis based on Kyrie's quotes, because I did find that interesting that he said that, and I just kind of just wanted to like look and see, you know, where are those past winners at. And sure, I mean, Kyrie has a good point there. Like a lot of the players, Wemby's putting up numbers that some of these players didn't put up. And again, the only thing that's probably going to hurt his cause is the fact that the Spurs do have you know a bottom 10 defense right now, or they're ranked 23rd right now. So again, that would be the one part that's going to make it difficult. But again, we'll kind of see what happens. Again, there have been outliers who have won the award, but no outlier has ever one that wanted all the way down their teams ranked at 23rd. So again, we'll kind of see what happens. And again, I just kind of wanted to share those quotes from Kyrie, because I did find those very interesting. One, about his perspective on trying to score against Wemby, and then two, just the fact that he's very supportive of Wemby being a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. All right. Thank you to Ben for taking some time to join me on this episode of the Spurs Cast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.